This is it. We're recording. It's happening. Yay. What's your dog's name again?
Pumpkin.
Pumpkin. Pumpkin, are you ready? Okay. Welcome to the Zevil Rebel Podcast. I'm your host, Talia Herring, and this is the podcast where we rebel against Zevil one episode at a time. In today's episode, Meital Peleg Mizrahi joins me to discuss sustainable fashion. She is a doctoral candidate in the Department of Public Policy at Tel Aviv University. Her doctoral dissertation deals with the various ways of encouraging consumption and production of sustainable fashion, with emphasizing on economic regulation in the field of textiles. She researches, writes, and lectures on fashion and environmental justice. She's actually going to be called up anytime soon by the news to be interviewed. And also she's running off right after this to go to the North for SI anyways. And the founders of Dresswell, which is a really cool movement that promotes fair fashion in Israel. They have monthly events and she's going to tell us a little bit more about it. They work to raise public awareness of the environmental and social damage of fast fashion industry and the existing alternatives, which I love because it's so easy to come up with the issues and to point fingers, but come up with the accessible and existing solutions that already exist. I love it. So thank you so much for joining me. I know you have a busy, busy day. So thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm excited for this. So can you tell us a little bit more about what you do?
Yes, sure. I feel like you said everything and you described me so much better than I described myself. So
you're flattering me for flattering you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm not sure how can I...
Okay, I like it.
I think if I need to describe myself in one sentence, I'm a fashion activist. I mean, this is what I do. I fight the climate crisis and I try to raise awareness to the climate crisis and what can we do about the climate crisis throughout fashion. And I know sometimes it sounds weird, especially when I tell people that I save the world during the throughout fashion. You know, it's a very big,
it's a big claim.
Yeah, yeah, it's a big claim and I'm aware of it and claim it. But I really believe that fashion can save the world and we can save the world throughout fashion, good fashion. So this is the main thing I do. How does it look in my everyday? I research sustainable fashion throughout my doctorate. I write about sustainable fashion and about what is behind the scene of the fashion industry. I give lectures about it. I talk about it everywhere, which is willing to listen. Many times in places that are not willing to listen.
Oh, I want to hear more about that.
Well, those are my favorite place to come. I enjoy crashing into places.
What's been the toughest crowd?
The toughest crowd? Wow, that's a good question. Well, I had a very mixed crowd. I gave lectures in Hebrew, obviously, in the Arabic, with the translation, in English, in the Stein language. I mean, I gave lectures to so many different crowds. But the toughest crowd was not those that needed to be translated, or teenagers that tend to listen for a short period of time. But actually, people that the people like me and you and like you that are listening, those of us who already know in some place deep in our heart, we know that the shoes that we bought, probably 12 years old, the child somewhere in Asia made those shoes. And we know it, but we don't recognize that we know it.
And the different level.
Yeah, and the minute that I stand there and I tell them that me and you are part of the problem and we're paying for this problem and we take part in exploiting the people all over the world, polluting the world, this is the toughest crowd. I had one lecture in the high-tech company that invites me to give the lecture. And I think they thought it's going to be an easy breezy lecture. And it was very difficult for them. Somewhere in my 10th slide, 10 out of 100, the CEO, we just stood and started telling me that what I'm saying is wrong and it's not okay. And that they the people that manufacture our clothes, that produce our clothes, they need to say thank you that he's giving his money so they have work and they don't need to go, all of those young children, they don't need to go and work in a...
Yeah, we're doing them a favor that they're getting.
Yeah,
they're getting a salary from our clothing.
Exactly,
and you're like, this is not better than prostitution. This is just
different. This is like still slavery. And he's like, no, this is
exactly. It's more respectful.
Exactly.
And for me, it was at the first minute, I was like, okay, this is very in my face. Usually, even if people think that they don't, then to stand and say it in front of everybody, then this is okay. And I told him that I don't think slavery is something that we can accept because there are things that are worse. I think that we need to aim for fair trade. And we had
a... Was this a company that works in textiles?
I'm trying to think how can I say it in a diplomatic way because they don't work in the fashion industry, but they do make earn their money from doing things that...
ethically, that
don't help us to solve the climate crisis.
Okay.
I'll put it this way.
Yeah.
And it was a tough argument because
in the end of the day, it's about values.
And I believe that nobody needs to suffer in slavery and definitely not to die in order to produce our dreams. And
a fair statement, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think
we can agree with that.
Exactly. But on the other side, he said, well, this is the world. I understand that there's better things that could be, but this is the world right now. And if I won't buy it, it's not going to help them by any means.
Yeah, like why boycott? Then they're not going to get any money.
Yeah, exactly. And I understand the argument, but it was really difficult.
So what is the solution? I'm not, like, I get why we shouldn't, like, I buy secondhand clothing, I'm not going to go to fast fashion and order things and like create more of a need. But like these factories already exist. And if I'm going to shop locally, that doesn't give them money. So how can we rewire these factories to actually give fair wages and fair rights to their employees?
That's a very good question. We need to remember that they're not getting the money now either. I mean, when we go and we buy from big fashion corporation, the person who gets our money is the CEO, the CEO of the brand and people in the first line, not the woman and the children that are actually sewing on clothes. So they don't get the money either way. They're usually being paid $3 a day, something that is not enough for sufficient living or any that doesn't give them the ability to even feed their own children. It's not something, it's not like now they're getting.
It's not like right now they're living minimum wage and like it's enough to get by.
Yeah.
But even if they're only getting $3 a day, isn't that better than $0?
It's not a choice between $0 or $3.
It's like somewhere else.
Yeah. What we need to do as consumers is to buy from places that are fair trade. Mm-hmm. The more that we as consumers will choose to put our money in the good places, in the places that they are paying the good salaries and fair salaries, we will see more and more places like this and less sweatshops.
For sure.
So in the end, it's a question of money and where we choose to put our money. And the best thing that we can do is to choose to buy from the places that good fees. The middle of it is that us as consumers will not be able to continue buying clothes for $2, $5, $10. This is impossible.
For sure. It's like I see sometimes cheap flights to Europe that are 15 euros. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. And like, there's something about it as the two, you're like, ooh, I want to jump at the chance. And it is tempting. But then there's the logical brain of like, that there's no way that can cover the cost of what the action is, right? So when you get a t-shirt and you're paying $5 for it, there's no way it could make any sense that this is coming from China on a boat and the store is paying rent and the salespeople are getting money and all this. And how could it make sense that this is working? It doesn't make any lot of sense.
Exactly. And it's happening because somebody is paying the price. Those clothes are the true cost of those clothes are much higher than the $5 and the $10. It's just that we are not the one to pay the price. The people who pay the price are the weakest people in the society, globally wise. Those are very, very poor women from poor countries. And we don't look at it when we pay the price, and we don't look at the high environmental cost of the,
for sure,
of the clothes.
And there are, like, there is a movement, like, when you're talking about consumers supporting companies that are paying fair wages. Like, I was looking into this, like, reusable water bottle that the money collected goes to pay people to collect more water bottles from the rivers. And also, it's a B Corp, so that means it's, like, registered under certain conditions. And it's, the factory's in China, which, like, sounds bad, right? It's in China, but it is paying fair wages. They have fair rights. Like, they have contracts. They have all the necessary things. So it's, like, one of the solutions of people, giving people jobs in Southeast Asia and China and places where they need to have the right, and supporting factories that exist there, because boycotting everything doesn't make sense, right? And also, like, what else are you supposed to do? And we have to manufacture things, right? We're right now overly manufacturing. We need to slow down, but, like, eventually we're going to need something to be created.
Yeah, that's a good point, because we need to say that the definition of sustainable fashion is quite complicated.
For sure.
And there's, in this basket of sustainable fashion, we put a lot of things like secondhand clothing and independent designers and upscale and bangless and more solutions. But many of those solutions, they contradict each other. I mean, if I buy from independent designer, then I buy something new. But if I buy secondhand clothes, I can't know what's the work conditions of the people who made it initially. Or it's harder to control the content of the fabric and whether or not it's going to send microplastic into the sea. Mm-hmm. And both of them are a contradiction to buy less,
yeah,
which is the ultimate solution.
For sure. And even, like, with sustainable fabrics, right? If something's made out of recycled plastics, that's good because it's using up plastics. But maybe it's still going to release microplastics when you put it in the washing machine.
It is.
Or that it's not going to last as long as a other fabric, and then you're shortening the lifespan, meaning that you're going to have to consume more. And in general, it's overconsumption, right? So if you're going thrifting and you're buying 50 items, that's still part of the problem. Exactly. And I still feel like it's confusing.
It's very complicated. And if we talk about fossil-free fashion, for example, don't buy fashion that is polyester-based and fuel-based, which is an important movement inside of them.
A lot of sustainable fabrics, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big part of the fabrics that there is. And, well, we can go and buy and recycled polyester and all of this. But as you said, if you buy 50 t-shirts from recycled polyester, it doesn't help us. It's not sustainable. So it can be very confusing how to consume sustainable fashion. But on the other side, it makes me really optimistic, because there's much more than one way to do it on the right way. And for me, for some of my friends, capsule wardrobe is the answer.
Well, can you just define capsule wardrobe in case
I can try. I don't do capsule wardrobe. For me, I love my big wardrobe. But capsule wardrobe is when you take small amounts of clothes outside of the closet and a capsule clothes. And you wear only those clothes for certain periods of time. There's many different versions in the internet. Sometimes it's for 3 weeks, sometimes 3 months. But the basic idea is that you wear only those clothes, and then you can go out shopping inside of your own closet. And you don't need to buy new clothes, and you wear the clothes you already have as many times as possible.
I feel like people kind of naturally do that. Like, even if you have a big closet, you end up wearing the same. You have a kind of a uniform of your fashion. Like, at least I notice, like, I wear jeans that like this, and I wear these t-shirts that I like, and these few, even also by the weather, right? So if it's winter right now and I have 3 sweaters, like, those are on my feet right now.
That's very true. In 80% of our time, we wear 20% of our clothes.
Yeah.
So we're
naturally capsule.
Exactly. But the problem, what we do that a capsule wardrobe woman don't do, is buying new clothes at the same time. Clothes that we don't wear, but we tend to buy more and more clothes because we feel like we have nothing to wear, because we're wearing the same 3 jeans. And also, the wardrobe people, they will tell you, take outside of the closet for your capsule, the clothes that you didn't wear for the next 6 months. Try to see how you can work it out. And if you can't work it out, take it outside of the closet. So in the end, you will have a very small and accurate closet.
Mm-hmm. It's also probably, like, I'm not a stylist, but I would assume there's something correlated to that of, like, picking your specific style.
Yeah. I was reading this really interesting research in the mornings for the interview. A new research found that the key for sustainable fashion is living wage for the worker. Not bamboo and not scented materials and not clothes from mushrooms and pineapple and all of those high-tech solutions that we think when we talk about sustainable fashions, but just paying
minimum wage.
And it's
like, crazy. It's crazy that that's where we're going for. Like, striving for that is something that's so basic.
Oh, well, I agree, but not everybody thinks that this is the basic thing. Some people think that, like, mm-hmm. making their money. Some people think that this is not the main thing. And actually, I understand that because when we talk about sustainable fashion, we tend to go to this very advanced solution. And how can we decrease the amount of carbon emission and toxic chemicals, these very polluting colors that we use to dye the clothes and all of this. And it makes sense. But actually, the solution is obviously to produce less clothes, not the 52 collections in a year. And we can produce less if we will pay more for the workers.
Sure.
And it makes so much sense and sounds like such a simple solution, but yet so radical.
Yeah. I was just reading that H&M announced that they want to double sales in the next 10 years. And I was like, I don't understand how you could promise all these sustainable new brands, like within H&M, right? They're like trying to recycle jeans and, you know, reuse.
It's greenwash.
It's so greenwash. And it's like, we are overconsuming. Like, don't we understand we have a limited amount of resources and you cannot keep on just expanding how many you're selling. Like, people don't want to buy that much. Like, we can't emotionally, physically, like, the world can't produce that much. Like, please stop it. Like, how do you just stop it?
It's made me so furious because they are putting out there all those commercials about how they're becoming so much more sustainable than before. Of course, they're becoming more sustainable because before you were not sustainable at all. And now you're just a little bit sustainable, a little bit, but it's much more than before.
But you kept saying that, like, if we're not paying minimum wages, it's not sustainable, right? And I totally
agree. That's the point.
So can we, like, legally change the meaning of sustainable so that
they use that word? At some places, they're trying to do those things. They're even, they tried in Israel to pass the laws for preventing the greenwash,
mm-hmm.
to standardize what can we call sustainable, not only in session, but in general. It didn't happen in the end. But today, there's a few places in the world that they're trying to make a certificate for sustainable fashion. But again, it's complicated because when we talk about sustainable fashion, there's much more than one thing to say what is the sustainable. And it's problematic because it's given out of the space for all the bad guys and the greenwash that's going on. Because everybody could call themselves sustainable. And us as consumers are getting really confused. Now, I don't blame the consumers that go and buy in places like H&M and Zara. Sustainable and responsible collection. I understand because they see this home and they see television or whenever in the cell phone that they became so much more sustainable than before. And they say, okay, there's a climate crisis, so I'm going to buy the sustainable and fashion metals and that it's important.
Yeah.
But they're lying to the people. It's not sustainable. And there's no way that something will be sustainable as long as they're exploiting the people and they don't talk about it. About the people that produce our clothes. And I'm not even talking about how many clothes they're produced in a year. But this is not sustainable.
I also think that, like, right now, people are at a standstill of, like, okay, I want to be sustainable and I don't know the right action. So what do I do in this situation? I think in that answer, it's like, I would rather fall on the side of, like, not buying and being like, okay, I'm going to wait it out and, like, just buy less. Then feel like I have to buy something. So let me find something that's sustainable in order to feel like, okay, I don't need to feel like a good guy. Because worst case scenario, let's say we're wrong about the definition of sustainability. We're still saying that humans deserve basic rights, and we're still trying to fight for that. And as long as I want to not bring more damage, like that, I think that's the best way to like to approach sustainability. It's like, let's try not to make more,
yes,
more issues.
That's very, very, very true. And the best solution is always to balance, always, always. And the greenest garden that there is the one that you already made.
For sure.
That's true. But with that being said, I love fashion. I love fashion, and I studied fashion. I used to work inside of the fashion industry. I love fashion, and I understand why people want to buy new clothes. I buy them. Mm-hmm. So I understand that saying just buy less is not always the solution. It's the best solution, but it's a difficult solution that isn't right for everybody. So how do we do sustainable fashion? The first thing is get the information, learn about your clothes, where your clothes came from, who made your clothes.
Find information.
There's many good places to find out the information. I would start with the Fashion Revolution site.
They have great stuff. Wow.
Great. And I'm such a huge
fan. Yeah. Fangirling.
I met in COP26, the conference. I met Gabi, the CEO of the Fashion Revolution. Now, I can speak English, I read in English, that sounds good, but the minute I saw her, I was like, oh, Metan, big fan, Israel. I became such a groupie. It took me like 10 minutes to try to explain to her how much I adore her. Really, she's amazing, and if by any chance you hear it, I can't speak English.
Here's it for you.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's amazing.
It was so amazing. It was my minute at the COP26. So Fashion Revolution is a great place to get information. Sustain Your Style is also a very good website. Good on You, it's a good website. Clean Closet Campaign, also a good website. All of them gives very good information. In Hebrew, we have the Meetup Show as well, which is the woman that we founded 3 years ago. We have Fair Trade Israel that gives a lot of the information. We have the Monk. Those are all great places. And of course, you're more than welcome to talk with me. I really work hard to write a lot of information in Hebrew because I know that not everybody can write all of this information in English. When it's in your native language, it's very confusing.
Sure.
In other languages, it's like, what is this? I can never do it. Let's just close the computer.
Exactly. It has to be accessible.
Yeah. So I write a lot about it in Hebrew. So the first thing is just get the information, understand what's the price and where we can buy. The second stage will be detox yourself from fast fashion. It's difficult. Very difficult. And it's stupid.
You're speaking from past experience. Like,
yeah. Really, I hear you. I know it's difficult. It took me more than a year to rehab from a first patient. And it's not an easy process, but it's very, very helpful. You will feel so much better afterwards. And then the last stage is find out where you do want to put your money, which means the independent designers that are not part of the big corporation, first fashion corporation, and the designers that are doing upscaling. And just find your own unique way to sustainable fashion, which is fun.
Yeah. I think it makes everything a little bit more creative also. Like, it's instead of just buying something that is convenient because it exists, it's like you're going to have a stronger relationship to that item of clothing. It's going to speak louder of your style. It's going to be more significant. Like, what's the word? Like, emotional.
Yes, it's an emotional connection. And that's actually a very important tip. To identify your own personal style. The better we know what is our personal style, the less unnecessarily clothes that we will buy. But more important than that, the better we will feel and look.
For sure.
Which is the main meaning of a fashion, to make us feel good.
For sure. Yeah. I want to ask you, how did you get involved? What clicked for you about sustainable fashion? Like, how did this all begin?
That's an interesting story. I took a course during my second degree with interesting people in the environment.
Yeah, he's the best. Hands down. No one compares.
Yeah. I know. He should have a crowd at the
moment. Yeah.
So I took a course, not because it was interesting for me. It was either this or statistics. So I thought to say sustainability sound better than statistics. So let's take the sustainability course. But I knew nothing about sustainability, and I was mistaken to think back then that the sustainability is something for people who have too much time and nothing to do with this pandemic. I didn't know. I was ignorant. So I said, okay, let's take the 300 course. And we got a task in the course that we were, each one of us got a random date, and we needed to give a lecture about, a 10-minute lecture about something related to sustainability that happened in the day that we got. And after the 24th April, the Session Revolution, which is the day that the Rana Plaza disaster happened, the day that one of the biggest textile factories in the world collapsed, in world. And I Googled the 24th April, and in Hebrew say, my eyes got dark. I couldn't.
That's traumatic. That is a tough assignment.
This was a tough assignment, but other people got other dates that was really.
Well, also terrible.
I don't know if terrible. It was random dates according to the alphabet. I mean, some of them got really nice dates, like the bees dates, the dolphin dates. But yeah. I got the Fashion Revolution Day. I really love fashion. And by that point, I already had a giant closet, the biggest one out of all of reference. And I start reading about the Rana Plaza disaster and all the companies that were manufacturing clothes in this factory. Companies like Mandel, Zara, H&M, and Bendel that I have in my closet. And I felt so ashamed of myself. I couldn't believe that me, the big feminist that go and protest for women rights, I pay with my own credit card for women to be abused and killed. So I can buy cheap fashion. I just felt so ashamed. And it was the before and after. Like I took the blue pill. And from that, everything became different. At the first stage, I stopped buying clothes. That was my big reason. I just stopped buying clothes. I felt like I can't take part of it anymore unless I will know how to do it right. So I just didn't buy.
Yeah, I like that because it's like you didn't have the solution. You didn't know. You're like, this is scary. I'm learning this is like a real reality. First you pause and you're just like, let me just take a break from this before you figure it out. Because
yeah. And I start reading everything I can read about the fashion industry. And I was amazed by how much information there is on the one hand, but how much I was unaware. And not only me, almost everybody around me, nobody knew that the fashion industry is such a polluting and exploitative industry. So I read a lot about the fashion industry and I couldn't stop talking about it. I became obsessed. I read about it and I read and read and read and talk about it. And I signed this desk. Instead of a 10-minute desk, it became a half an hour. And after half an hour, I was like, okay, enough. Thank you.
Yeah, she's separating.
Yes. But it became what's today is the lectures that I give when I go and I give lectures.
I love your lecture. I think it's amazing because you talk about what it means as a person not supporting this, you know, terrible industry, but also like emotionally what it does for you in your own style and your own like self-worth and believing in like the abundance of like being okay with what you have instead of just searching for new ways of like filling our closets. And I think like there is a huge lack of abundance when we go shopping, like the marketing, and we're told that we have to buy our happiness. We're told that we have to look cool enough and we're told that we're not enough the way we are. And it's like this part of our psyche is that I have to buy this to look cool for people to like me for, and it becomes this thing that we all grew up with. Like everyone I think could relate to this of like, I remember in middle school, everyone wore a certain brand clothing and I didn't have that. And I felt less good. And my value was lower as a person. And then when you're out of that equation and you're like, my fashion is my style and I'm buying vintage things that are unique. You're not part of this competition anymore. And that really affects so many aspects of who you are as a person as well.
Definitely. I I'm such a big advocate of personal, your own style, not only because it's more sustainable, which it is, but also because it's the best way to enjoy fashion.
Yeah.
Not to buy according to what is trendy and what is the...
That's like, now I'm thinking about, that's not fashion. That's just like...
Yeah.
It's just consumerism.
Exactly. That is not the fashion. We tend to confuse between love shopping and love fashion. Those are not the same thing.
I love that.
I don't love shopping. It's not about buying something new. It's about enjoying the magic and the creativity of the fashion. And enjoying the creativity of fashion is something you do with the clothes that you have in your closet. And understanding how each and every clothes can look in a different combination with what you already have. So it's a different kind of thinking about fashion and about being a fashion lover.
So do you have a tip for someone? It's like shopping is usually like their therapy or ways to make them feel good. Like what's another way that they could feel that?
Well, first of all, I hear you.
First of all, I'm sending you a hug. I get it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it's not one person. It's the majority of us. We, from the minute we're being born, we're surrounded by commercial signals from society that tell us that about shopping therapy and shop until you drum up and buy and buy and buy and
this wiggle and this is coming.
Because we need to explain ourselves some way why we work so many hours. And why? So that's why. It's not your fault. That's the first thing.
Yeah, I like that. I like starting with like, this is inevitable. This is just the reality of growing up in this time. It's not your fault that you feel this way.
Definitely. Now the question is, what do we do about it? And like any big problem, the first step is recognizing this problem. Understand that we have a problem and we tend to buy out of emotional place and not because we necessarily need those clothes or gonna even wear and enjoy those clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And then find something else that gives you the same feeling as in the shopping, because when we shop, our brain is sending us dopamine and serotonin and all of these lovely hormones that make us happy. So again, it's not your fault, but it's also an optimistic message because there are other ways to get this dopamine and serotonin. How do we do it? For me, I go and I take a run, each and every day I run. But for other people, it's go hiking, go see a movie, go...
Yeah, I love doing activities as a way of like spending your money on a way of celebrating, but not buying more things. So like if I was going to spend, you know, 200 shekels at buying something, I would like go to a fancy restaurant with my friend, get a cocktail, like enjoy that holiday experience, or like going for the ride, like going to the beach. And it's like, how could you not be filled with dopamine there? Like, wow, today I was just looking at the sky. I was like, this is heaven. This is literally the best.
Exactly, exactly. It's about getting experience and getting good times and also getting the stuff and more stuff and clothes.
Yeah.
It's really about what we want to do with our money and with our time. We spend so much time on earning money, and then we spend this money so easily about things that we don't need that make us feel suffocated.
That's a really good point. I think there's a lot of time invested in online shopping also.
Mm-hmm.
Like in a mall, you would spend a day going to the mall or a half a day, and that'd be like, okay, 4 hours of your life is at a mall. And it's kind of an activity. You're walking around with a friend or with your family. Now that it's online shopping, there's like always a tab open and it's always a constant reminder. And it's kind of like when you're on Instagram or Facebook and you're scrolling without thinking about it. It takes so much time. You're wasting so much time.
And it's everywhere. It's everywhere. It's in our inside of our cell phones that are with us the entire day. And when you go on Instagram, you'll see so many commercials. Most of them will not call themselves commercials. You just see somebody is wearing something cool and then hi, this is the code for a discount.
Yeah,
right. Here you can click and buy. And it's all over us and we're getting the newsletters and the information and just buy. And not only that it has such a high environmental cost, but in the end, it doesn't make us happy.
You know,
and that's the biggest problem. We're not getting happier from all of this.
It's causing harm and we're not getting happy. Like, at least get one.
Yeah.
At least let's be happy because of it.
Yeah. Well, we're not.
It's true. It's like, the more consumers we are, the our happiness levels go down. And I think that that's like another illness of, let's say another part of climate change is not only are we affecting the planet in a way that's needs repair, but like we're affecting ourselves. Like we're not gaining as much as we think we're getting from this.
Yes, yes, yes. And when calling it the consumption culture, and it's not a mistake, it is a culture. It's surrounding us and we're being educated to take part in this culture, but culture can be changed. And it's our choice how we want to shape the culture that the surrounding us. And you'll be surprised to know how easy it is the moment after you say, stop, I don't want to be part of it.
Yeah. How do you feel now? Like, do you not, would you get advertisements differently or will?
I try to. I definitely look at advertise differently. And when I see an advertise for a full t-shirt in 100 shekel.
Yeah.
Which is terrible.
Wow.
It's terrible.
It's so confusing. Like, this makes me not want to shop here. Why?
And that's the first thing that I think. It's like, okay, this is terrible. Somebody pay really high price for this cheap clothes. And I hope nobody will ever buy it and they will not produce it. But this is the easy one. I mean, everybody by now, everybody that listened and know by now know that for a full t-shirt in 100, it's big.
But what about like, but okay, you have kids, right? It's not hard to like get runs enough clothing for the start of school.
Well, it is hard, but not only for my children, because my children, they're quite young. So they're still in the stage that they are listening to me. Yeah, we'll see what's going on in 2 to 5 years. But now my young daughter, she speaks mainly gibberish and I put her and she's happy with that.
Yeah.
And my other son, which is 5 years old, he understands because I explained him. I explained him that we don't want to buy more things, not only clothes, but also more toys and more whatever. We don't want to buy more because it makes the earth has stomach pain when we buy a land, and that we have climate crisis, and this is something that we can solve. But I need his help to solve the climate crisis, and
I love it. That's amazing. I feel like we need to do another podcast episode about how to explain the climate crisis to kids, because I don't have kids, and so I don't have to deal with that. But like, it is so interesting. It's like huge threat that's in the reality. And then, like, how do you break that down as a parent of, like, wow, that responsibility?
Wow, it's not easy, and it's a big topic, and there are bigger experts than me.
Mm-hmm.
I can talk only as a mother. But my advice is to talk with your children about the climate crisis. We don't think that it's too scary for them and that we might traumatize them or give them a climate depression if we will talk with them. But it's all about how we talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
If we explain them about the climate crisis in their own language and with an optimistic message that this is something we can solve, and then hear how you can take part in the solution. So it's make them feel stronger.
Yeah.
Not weaker. My son, Gome, which is 5.5 years, he take part in the quality of the environment committee in his daycare.
That's why
it's cute. Really, really cute. And now he's organizing with the rest of the committee. So cute.
Sweet. It makes me so happy. What do they do next?
In the democratic school, they're organized now a give and take market.
Okay.
Clothes and toys.
Amazing.
It was his idea. And when he came and told me about it, I was so
you're like funny. So proud. You're like,
I did my thing. Okay. I can quit now. So it's really about talking with them and explain them what they can do and how can they take part of the solution.
I love that because it's like the values that you're teaching your kid. Like you get to impart your values that you hold as these truths. Like I can be part, I get a gain by being part of this system. And then you teach a child that you can also be part of this.
Yeah.
You can take leadership roles and you can respect the planet and you can think creatively of solutions. And I think that's so much to...
That part. Definitely. And it's also giving answers. My son asked me, why am I vegetarian? Why everybody around me eating meat and I'm the only vegetarian? And I explained to him that animals is our friends and they're sharing their health with us. So we don't eat our friends. And that it's very painful for them that when they're being killed for food, and I don't want him to take part. And it's okay. He understood it. And became so proud of himself for not eating animals. So everything can be explained.
It doesn't have to be gory and like this dramatic, like mean sort of setting. It could just be like, okay, we have a dog in the house. We love animals. Like this is like, we love animals. And like, we don't even, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The hard part is explaining to him why people he loves eat meat.
Yeah.
And it's
like how to not be judgmental. And
it's very difficult because when I go, for example, and explain to him that I go by bicycle and don't take my car to work because it's polluting. And then he come and tell me, but why this one and this one go in my car and you're the only one? What? Don't they care about the pollution? Don't they care about the climate crisis that you told me? And it's a difficult question.
So what do you say?
I told him that most of the people don't know. And if they would know the true meaning of it, they would probably act different. And that he can do, and what I do every day is explain to people, help them know better. Most of the time, it's a good answer.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's like giving people the benefit of the doubt. It's like, we didn't all grow up the same way. We didn't all learn the same things. They probably would want to change if they knew how, or if they knew the information. We're so lucky that we get to know the information, talk about it. And maybe we can invite them for a bike ride and they'll enjoy it with us. Or so like that. It's a little bit more inclusive and not like they're not doing it right, right? Because every family is going to raise their kids with different values and they're always going to ask these questions, right? So it's not like you're the only one answering these questions. Every parent is answering questions of like, why is our family different than other families? And I think these are such healthy conversations to have.
Yes, yes. And also, I didn't know, again, until the day that I got the desk.
True.
I didn't know. So
what are you blaming other people? Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that people are good in their nature and nobody would buy fast fashion, wouldn't go back to fashion if they would know what's the true cost and how the everyday life was, people working in the factories look, or how polluting is the fashion industry. So I really believe that the best thing and the most important thing that we can do is, first of all, tell about it to others. And it doesn't matter if we don't know the exact facts of how much has emission the fashion industry release, or what's the exact percent of microplastics in the sea related to the fashion industry. But yeah, it doesn't matter if you don't know the exact fact. Don't feel like you can talk about it because you're not an expert. You don't need to be an expert. You just need to spread the word, and that's the most important
thing. I love that. I want to ask you, was there a moment that was really challenging that kind of like pushed you in your beliefs about how to act in climate action and like your mission with spreading the awareness?
The COP26 was a difficult moment for me. I am a participant in the United Nations Climate Conference on my work, which is in the change direction. And I went there with a lot of hopes. I was really looking for the goal. And I believe that after 2 years of coronavirus pandemic and understanding how the climate crisis affects our lives, people are going to come there with a sense of urgency and understanding that now this is the biggest threat and we need to work right now. This is the thing and the most important thing. And then I went there and it's looked like a business conference.
Yeah.
With all kinds of people in fancy suits, changing their business cards and telling about this technology and that technology. And
networking event.
Yeah. And I looked at it and I felt like I need to shake them. What is going on? We have such a big problem. You can't keep on being so stupid. Now, I understand that there's a way to think about, to talk about things, and my PhD is in public policy, and I don't say that the only way to change the world is standing with science. No, those talks are important. But it was really so frustrating and so easygoing, and almost as if they don't understand that there's a big crisis.
Yeah.
And add to that the fact that out of this giant 2 weeks event with 300 different rooms with activities the whole time, there was only one event about fashion.
And wow.
I couldn't believe it, because this is the second most polluted industry. And a fairly big part of the climate crisis, not only by problems, but also by the solution. This is part of how we can solve the climate crisis. And nobody wanted to talk about the fashion. And it was so, so, so frustrating. I understand that we need to talk about renewable energy, and we need to talk about smart transportation, whatever that means. And we need to talk about all kinds of issues. But we must talk about fashion. And the only event that related to fashion was event Changing Markets and Fashion Revolution did, which called Why We're Not Talking About Fashion at Corp. The answer is because it's a gender issue. Fashion is a subject that usually women, it's considered to be important enough. And it's a huge mistake, but many people today still think that way.
Why is it considered not important enough?
Well, I can guess. I can say, because for me, it's the most important thing. But I have a few guesses. First of all, because when we talk about the environment and the climate crisis, we usually talk about things disposable plastic, renewable energy, Greta Thunberg, and fashion is not the first thing that we used to think when we think about the climate crisis. So that's one reason. The second reason is because in general, the issue of fashion is considered to be quite superficial. It's something that not very smart people engage with. And it's related to women, because women love fashion and women buy fashion. And this is not an important issue. We say important because it's very important. But many people still think it's superficial, and they don't understand that this is a giant industry in it. For trillions of dollars, and it has a lot of power.
It's like thought of maybe as more optional. Like, transportation is necessary, and we have, quotes of what we need to do for like carbon emissions, but like fashion is like, okay, we just don't buy less. Maybe it's not talked about because going down on our consumerism is not marketable, and they're trying to sell things with like, you have to buy this electric car, it's like you can buy, and like getting solar power is something you buy, and then not buying fashion doesn't fit into that narrative.
Yes, that's also. That's also a good reason. I didn't thought about it, but yes, it's also a big part of the issue. And I think also us in the environmental movement, many times we feel uncomfortable to talk about fashion and reduce consumption in general, because we want to tell the people, yes, you don't need to give up anything, and you can have very good life, which is sustainable, because we can market much better. But the truth is that we do need to change the way we live, and we do need to consume less, and we do need to fly less, and we do need to take the bus sometimes instead of, even when it's less comfortable. This is the uncomfortable truth.
Yeah, that we have to get less comfortable.
Yes.
I try to put it into like, we have to be less comfortable, or we have to be more comfortable with being part of a solution. Like, it has to be like, I'm not sacrificing because for the greater good of everyone, because then it's like a competition with everyone. But it's like, I enjoy composting because it's like, okay, I'm going for a walk now. I bring my compost to something that's like communal. I get to appreciate that I'm connecting to the earth. Like, it's just spin in a way that's like, I'm doing this for me. Like, if nothing comes of this, like, this is for me, right? So like, if for fashion, it's like, I'm doing this for my own self-image. Like, that's why I'm doing it. I'm doing this because I don't want to be part of something that is modern day slavery. And then it's not about, okay, the carbon emissions and this and this and this and like, you know, spilling bleach in the ocean. But I think with environmentalism, the problem is we want to be the good guy, and we want to feel like we're the heroes. And like, we're literally creating fake trees to soak up carbon emission from the environment. But like, trees do that, and trees also bring happiness, and they
help socioeconomic levels, and they help our, you know, cool down the streets. And the trees are necessary in so many different ways. That's not just like this data point of carbon. Yeah. And I think with fashion, it's the same thing. There's so many layers to fashion that's not just a carbon point. Like, the pollution is not one dimensional.
That's very, very true. And I really agree with this perspective. You know, Professor Dorit Kennan, she writes a lot about positive sustainability. And this is her main thesis. It's about the way we perceive it, because we could look at giving up the private car, and as if we're giving up something for the greater good.
The sacrifices, I mean.
Yeah, but we could also look at it as if when I ride my bicycle, I gain better health. I enjoy the ride much more because I'm not sitting inside of the
traffic.
And inside of my car in the traffic.
That's how it is here.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, I can sit in my car and beeping everybody, but instead I can just take my bicycle and I want to get it faster and healthier and enjoy the ride more. And it's true also about sustainable fashion. When I choose not to buy fast fashion, I don't lose everything on the contrast. I gain so much more. I have a better, more quality closet with unique style, and my clothes are much more quality clothes that could serve me in 10 years from today. So giving up fast fashion is not giving up on something. You're not losing something. You're gaining much more.
Yeah. I love that. Okay, so I just want to ask for a call to action. Like, what could you tell the Zebel Rebels that are listening, how they can get involved, how they can rebel against fast fashion?
I love it. They're a rebellion.
Yeah.
The minute you say rebel, I already...
You're
already
like, beside me.
Exactly. Where is it happening?
Start a fight.
Yeah, exactly. What can you do? And then first of all, spread the word. People need to know. People need to know what's the true cost of fast fashion, and they will know if you'll tell the story. So that's one thing we can do, is to tell the story. Another thing we can do is asking the fashion companies and the big brands about their environmental performance and about the working conditions of the people that are sewing the clothes in the factories. Send them a message through the Instagram or by email, but I want to know what's the working conditions of the woman in your factories.
I love that. Whoa.
Yes. That's really easy to do, and it doesn't take a lot of time, but it's so, so, so important.
Also, it's like so unique that we live in a time period where we can reach companies so easily.
Yes.
Twitter and Instagram, it's just like it.
Exactly. Okay. Take advantage of that. Another thing you can do is join a movement. Join the Square, join the Fashion Revolution, join the Clean Closet campaign, and make an event in your own place, at your work, at your home. A swap party or a good lecture, something that will help people to take next step into sustainable fashion. So there's a big range of things we can do. Just find whatever you feel comfortable, but do something. Don't think that it's too big to do something. It's not too big. It's in your own hands.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining me. And if you want to get a lecture with Mictel, like, she gives amazing, amazing talks, and I've listened to her speak. And so if you want to be in touch with her, you can find her on Instagram, Dress to Save the World, and you can look into her speaking events. Thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you, Zebel Rebels, for listening. If you enjoyed today's talk, please leave a review and tell others about this podcast. Next episode, I will be interviewing Rabbi Akiva Gersh, who is known as the Vegan Rabbi on Instagram. And we're going to be discussing the Jewish basis for eating not animal oils, like just how it makes sense in Judaism. And I'm really excited about that conversation. So until then, stay rebellious. Bye, Rebels.